It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right. You will have to accept my apologies if there are crazy noises. Some sort of construction is happening on our street.
Okay.
I don't really understand what it is. And at this point, it might be because they appear to need to put a no parking sign back in the ground. And so it might just be entirely so they can fix that one sign. We just found it sitting in our yard. It was fun.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
You turned one. Good job.
Thank you. Yeah, obviously that's the grandson's balloons, but they're still at our house.
Is he only one?
He was older
for some reason.
He just turned one on the 1st of April.
Oh, one of those babies.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law is like that too.
That's also the birth date for Billy Batson. So he gets a lot of Shazam stuff from us, which his father finds annoying because his father's a Marvel fan, but that makes it a little more fun. I mean, it doesn't annoy him to a...
You're one of those bad grandpas I've heard about you.
It doesn't make him mad or anything. It's just a fun little thing that we can tease back and forth with the households. But he's got a little Shazam onesie, and he's got a little Shazam plush Shazam toy. He's got some Shazam stuff from us. So.
Signed headshot, Zach Levi.
And there's one of the ways we know that April 1st is Billy Batson's birthday is because there's an actual frame from a comic that says this explicitly. The Wizard Shazam is there, and there's a calendar on the wall that says April 1st, and he's talking about it being Billy Batson's birthday or whatever. So I asked Abby to take that frame and put Delmer's name wherever Billy's was. And so I've got a little frame of that with Delmer's name, and it's pretty cool.
But nice.
But anyway, yeah, that's going to probably be the joke forever, because I'll just never let that go.
Billy
Batson's birthday. Well, the great thing was...
Nerdy grandpa. The world's been waiting for this.
Before he was born, and we didn't know if it was going to be a boy or a girl, and it looked like it was going to be the first, I said, well, it doesn't matter, because Billy Batson has a twin sister, Mary Marl. So, you know, it's either going to be Mary or Billy. Doesn't matter. I'm ready either way.
So. The continuity is fine.
Yep. So yeah, that's his balloon. Back on the 2nd was a Saturday, so that's when we kind of celebrated down at Northridge Park, you know, and we got some balloons and we brought them home. So that's what those are. So it's been a while, and they're still up. That's kind of amazing, right?
We had that with my balloons in January too. They stayed up a long time.
Yeah.
It's like a better quality helium we're getting these days. fatter molecules.
Something, I don't know.
That plumper molecules.
chubby molecules.
And for some reason, very tickled by the idea that I'm not even entertaining the idea that it's a change in the material of the balloons. It is only about the plumpness of the helium. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world, as far as I know, that is court ordered. This acts as our community service, according to the judge, because it would, quote, keep us off the streets. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode, let me check, 579. I'm spoiled now. I'll never remember the number again.
You're just a cyborg.
A cowborg, actually, but that's fine.
He's more blog than man these days.
Twisted and evil.
Yeah, for those of you just joining us, we're celebrating William's first birthday. since we let him out of the attic. No. This is a podcast. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has an email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people write into that email address, whatever the crap they feel like. Some of it is really full of swears and hurts our feelings. But outside of that, it's all wonderful. The hat magically on its own forwards those emails to us, and then we read them on the air and talk about them, and except when we don't bother.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. Good job.
I gotta stop doing visual gags because people just listening to the audio can't tell, and also they're not funny. How's your week been?
It's good. You know, we've been watching Star Trek Discovery. Have you ever watched that?
I have not watched Star Trek Discovery. We don't have Paramount Plus. We applied for the lottery to get it, and they were like, no, only good people can have this, and you're not.
Would you watch it if you did have Paramount Plus, do you think? Or
I don't know. I don't know. I really don't. I went through all of them, and I dipped out at Enterprise, and I don't not ever want to experience any more Star Trek, but I'm kind of played out on Star Trek. I don't know.
I don't know.
Why do you got to ask me this stuff? It's not happening. I don't have Paramount Plus. Why you got to jam me into this weird hypothetical here? You know I hate that.
Oh, yeah, you hate hypotheticals.
When,
that's right.
When such times as Star Treks are brought in front of me, I will make a decision based on the existing circumstance as to my relationship with said Star Trek.
Okay. Star Trek's an odd property, really, because it's... If you're going to, you know, watch them all, that's a pretty big commitment. And yet, a person can say, yeah, I've watched every Star Trek, live action Star Trek that was ever made. That's not really that impressive a feat. I mean, you don't necessarily think that person's a super fan or whatever, but that is more commitment than, say, someone who's watched all the Marvel movies. You know, it's like, yeah, that's kind of impressive that you've watched all the Star Treks, but not really, you know. Maybe it's because...
Star Trek takes effort, but only kind of impressive.
Maybe it's because the people who now are
exclusively
real,
on Paramount Plus.
Maybe it's because people who are real fans are so far into it that, you know, just watching them all is that's just, you know, that's cute, right? It's like, yeah, oh, you watched them all. Good job. You know, I've got my room looks like the Ready Room in Star Trek The Next Generation, and I've got official uniforms from like three different series. You know, that's the kind of dedication that you really think of a Star Trek fan as having, not just watching them all.
Now I can't tell if this is you doing a thinly veiled version of you are that Star Trek fan, or somehow more likely you're actually making reference because you really wish you were a Star Trek fan, but they won't have you for some reason in this backstory I've created.
No, I was just thinking about my relationship to Star Trek in general, just like as a consumer of it. And I was realizing I've seen a lot of Star Trek. And I'm not opposed to seeing more. Like I didn't watch Deep Space Nine, but I'm not opposed to it. Like if there could easily come a time where I see that it's on Netflix or some, I don't know, whatever it's on. And I think to myself, hey, I've never watched that. I'll watch it. I don't know if I went back and watched all of Next Generation. I think I watched like half of it before I didn't have a TV any, because when Next Generation started, I was living with my first wife and I were living with someone else who had a television, so we could watch it. And then we weren't living with them anymore, and so I couldn't watch it. So I only saw like half of the run of Next Generation when it aired. I think I was able to go back and watch the rest, but I don't really remember. But that's another thing I would do.
They all just get sexier as the seasons go on, every cast member.
But I mean, I've seen all of the original series, and even recently I watched it. I've seen all of Voyager. I've seen, I think, all of the movies that they've made. So, you know, I was just thinking to myself, that's kind of a big deal to watch all that material. And yet I don't feel like anybody would say that I'm any more than a casual fan in spite of all that effort.
I'm not impressed at all.
See?
Are you looking forward to the new one?
The new what?
The new Star Trek show. Brave New Worlds, I think it's called.
Well, I mean, when I first heard of it, kind of, and now that we're watching Discovery, when you get into I think it's just the second season, the characters that are going to be in the new one are introduced in Discovery in the second season. So I'm kind of getting to know those characters and thinking that, oh, this actually might be fun to see their own show, you know. The thing about Discovery is, if you haven't watched it and you're thinking of watching it, I don't think most
for those of you just listening with headphones, he shook his head slightly when he said if you're thinking of watching it. So
my understanding is a lot of real fans, which again I don't think I count. A lot of real fans.
You've been tossing that phrase around a surprising amount this episode.
Well, because I'm trying to make a point. A lot of real fans don't like Star Trek Discovery. That's as much as I know. I don't know all the reasons why. I just have heard this and seen evidence of it in certain types of ratings and looking at certain sites and seeing how people are responding to it, just whether they like it or not. Not really any. I haven't really seen any substance for why. But as I'm watching it, it doesn't feel like a Star Trek story. There's a lot of things about it that kind of make it not feel like a typical thing. And one problem is the show really focuses on one major character. I don't remember any Star Trek doing that before. It seemed like every Star Trek before was kind of an ensemble thing. And, you know, you'd have whole episodes dedicated to this character. And then two episodes later, it would be this character. Or the whole ensemble usually, but having the entire show revolve around just one person, I think that's kind of unusual. Am I wrong about that or?
I don't know who you're asking. You're still
I'm
so
asking
much
you
bigger a fan than me. Clearly,
you've seen plenty of Star Trek. And is that correct that it's usually an ensemble thing? It's not usually revolving around one person. I think that's one of the problems with
there was that short-lived series Star Trek. Kevin J. Nashwood that was just about this one guy who wasn't in Starfleet. It's mostly just him going to school and stuff, and it only managed two seasons.
Going to school.
Yes, Star Trek : Kevin J. Nashwood.
That's good.
He would try to get people to call him Jay because like he was getting into college, but everybody knew his name was just Kevin and they just called him Kevin. It's the only show on record that doesn't have the Spock character because there are no aliens or artificial beings of any kind in the whole show, even though it takes place after Next Generation. He just lives in a really small town in Northern California. Okay. And just
I thought you were gonna say Iowa.
No. Big, serious people from Star Trek come from Iowa. No, this is just a couple hours south of Klamath Falls. There's nothing.
Okay.
But other than that show, I don't recall one that had a particular character focus. Although I have my suspicions with Star Trek Picard.
Oh, yeah, we haven't even watched that one.
There's a tip off in the title if you pay.
Maybe. But yeah, I mean it's kind of, that is a huge thing about the show, is that it follows basically one person, and you know, it interacts with other people, but it feels so weird when you're watching it. You're like, this just doesn't seem like Star Trek at all. And there's some, there are things it does that seem to violate continuity in big enough ways that even I notice. I don't think in the end they do, but it's just weird. It's like, it just doesn't feel like a Star Trek show. But if you can get over that, if you can just sort of get past how it doesn't feel like the usual vibe of Star Trek and just like it for what it is, it's not too bad. I mean, I find it pretty compelling and interesting. Abby and I both look forward to watching it in the evenings when we're done with work and we just want to, you know, watch something we don't want to have to work too hard watching it. I mean, it's not really challenging. Another problem with it is, though, that the fight scenes are terrible. I mean, they're the worst looking fight scenes since the original series, I swear. I'm watching this and I can't believe how bad they are. I don't know if it's because the directors don't know how to shoot fight scenes or the editors don't know how to edit them. They're really bad. I mean, like sometimes the way they shoot them, you could almost see them not making contact when they punch and stuff. It's really weird. I don't know why they get it so wrong, but a lot of the special effects, the space stuff that's all special effects look pretty cool. And that's another slight problem with it, is that it does kind of have that feeling of being mostly someone thinks of a big action set piece that they want, and then they build a story around that. Mm-hmm. Feels a little like that sometimes. But I mean, no, we still like it. And another thing that's interesting about it is there's a gay couple in it. And I don't remember Star Trek really having that before. Seems like they avoided gay people or queer people in general.
They've danced around it, as has Disney, a few times. There have been characters that were supposed to be the first Star Trek gay character, and then we did the weird thing with Sulu in the reboot ones.
Oh yeah.
Sort of out of nowhere.
I mean, they only kind of alluded to it, or kind of, they didn't really, like these two fellas, you get to know them both and they're interacting, they kiss and everything. I mean, it's like normal stuff, like real life, I guess. And it seems to me that either Star Trek avoided it, or it would only like allude to it and not really just have real three-dimensional characters interacting and, you know, sometimes having romantic moments and stuff. And, you know, I think that seems long overdue, considering Star Trek, you know, had the first interracial kiss on TV and all that stuff. It's like, why is it? When this first season, it was a couple of years ago now, but like 2018 maybe, or 2019, why did it take that long? It kind of blows my mind, really. I mean, considering how normalized you would think or hope this kind of thing is in the 23rd century or whatever, and this is the first time you just have this kind of relationship, and it's not treated as special or unique or anything else, it's just like everybody else. Why did it take so long? That's so weird to me. But I don't know. I don't know if I'd recommend it or not. If I think, like I say, a lot of Star Trek fans don't like it because it is different, and it is. It's very different. And there's What am I trying to say?
You pick now to ask me that? I haven't known for years.
There are Klingons in it, and they look very different than the Klingons have looked before. And that made people mad to the point where in season two, the Klingons look a lot more like people expect them to, and they have a really awkward story reason for that happening.
Oh, it's they've really done weird. That before. Yeah. They had that in DS9 when they went back to the original series episode with the Tribbles, and they were like, why do Klingons look different back then? No, it's a canonized awkward thing we don't talk about.
Well, yeah, I mean, people did not like the Klingons in the first season, so, and now they just suddenly started looking like they did before, and you know that was a response to the audience, and you kind of wondered at first what happened, and then during one of the episodes, someone made a passing mention of, I think the way they put it was, oh, now that this has happened, all the Klingons are growing their hair, because one of the things was none of them had any hair. But it wasn't just that. I mean, their head shape, everything was different. And now it's not just that some of the characters have hair when they didn't. Lots of other things are changed. But they're just trying to make you think, oh, no, they just grew their hair. Yeah, whatever. you guys.
Klingon fashion trends are very fickle.
But anyway, I have no idea if you'd like it or not.
I always knew that someday this podcast was going to crack into the worldwide market. And I knew that it was going to happen because we were going to offend a large enough structure that it would bring us to notice. I did not think Star Trek fans would be that demographic. And I did not think you would be the one to raise all the ire.
What did but I man, say?
Somebody, well, among other things, you used the phrase real fans several times, which just all automatically starts a fight, and that you didn't think Discovery seemed very Star Trek-y, and that real fans don't like it, and yeah, no, we're just, the hate mail is going to come in, and this is going to do it. This is going to finally shoot us to fame. I'm a little worried now, because I always assumed that on the ways up I'd sort of slough you off as I became famous, but if you're starting this, it might be the other way around.
So if I'm starting the beef, it might.
Yeah, I might have to cling tightly to your coattails on the
All right. Anyway,
We're a team. We could never separate the team. Come on, that's where the magic is.
That's all I have to talk about. What about your week?
The trip to the in-laws went real well. We had a really good time.
Oh, man, I forgot you did that. I'm glad it went well.
Yeah. And then we came back and got to sleep in our own bed. No, Trisha's next eldest sister found an old book of duets that she and Trish used to do, and they had just gotten their piano tuned. So they straight up played like the whole book in one room of the house while others of us talked in other rooms. It seemed a good birthday. Yeah, not much to say, but it was a good time.
Good.
Last night, I was very excited. I didn't know it was out yet. Then I found out it was, and so I was very excited. We watched The Bubble.
Oh, The Bubble, yeah.
I've been very excited for The Bubble, because The Bubble has a lot of people in it that I like a lot.
Oh.
It obviously has Karen Gillan, who I really like, and Fred Armisen, who I kind of don't, and David Duchovny, who whatever, and Keegan-Michael Key, who I really like, and Guz Khan, who's a British comedian, who I'm just really excited to see him in bigger things, and Veer Das, who is a Indian comedian, who I'm excited to see in bigger things, and it just looked really, and Peter Serafinowicz, who I always love, and there's just tons of people in it. Kate McKinnon is in it. Everybody's in this movie about making an action Jurassic Park style movie during COVID quarantine.
No.
and hijinks ensue. Oh, and Pedro Pascal also in it. Leslie Mann also in it.
I like Pedro.
And it's written by Judd Apatow. And actually, one of the main characters is his daughter. So,
you gonna tell us what you thought of it?
See, the fan's not moving now. You don't really know what's going on. It was good. It was funny. I laughed. I don't remember anything about it anymore. By the end of the movie, I had kind of forgotten the beginning of the movie. Like, it's fine. It's fun. Watch it. You'll chuckle. Your life will be exactly the same afterwards.
Mm.
It is not. It is not a movie that's going to stick. I will say this. It is 2 hours and 6 minutes long. It doesn't need to be 2 hours and 6 minutes long. It's not really? That kind of. It's not that kind of movie. It's very goofy. It's not all the best to everybody involved. And I love so many people involved, and I want nothing but success for them. No one from initial concept through writing, production, nobody tried super hard on this movie. And that's fine. I mean, it's better than Red Notice.
That's not saying very much.
No, but it's
kind of damning that, with faint praise there.
It's in that camp. This does not seem like anybody's passion project. You could argue it might be something for the filmmakers. There's a lot of stuff in it that feels like it would be funnier if you worked in show business. So maybe it's them. But it did absolutely nothing bad to me. I'm not sorry I saw it. I don't need that time back. But also, if you never see it, the relation of our two fate lines to each other will change not one iota. Yeah. So whatever. I do think Karen Gillan is just pushing for an American accent. I see her with an American accent way more than a British one. I think she's just trying to like fully assimilate. Which whatever works. I still like it. I love this thing with the fan being gone. You don't know now. I could be dead.
So how do you like your glasses? Now that it's been a while. You're not dead. Come on.
I do. I like them a lot. So does Trish, I think. I am worried when it starts to get hot because they are full frames. And so one particularly warm day, I got kind of an owie along here. So we'll see about that. But, you know, that's just glasses wear problems.
I mean, every once in a while, it'll just come into my consciousness that, oh, you look different because these glasses are so different than I'm used to. But I do like them. I think they're very becoming. I think the, you should be happy with them. But I mean, you know, maybe you're not. So that's why I asked.
I'm not. They drive me crazy. Every time I look, I'm like, who is that? I don't even know. Like I said, sometimes if I get lucky, if the beard is just the right length, I think it's that Guillermo del Toro. And I'm like, Guillermo del Toro, why are you in my bathroom? And then I don't know anymore. And then I take them off, which you think would help. But I my vision is really bad. So then I can't see anybody. Guillermo could still be there, lurking. I don't know.
I think there's a thing
just something of a nightmare.
I think there's a thing where culturally, where glasses can, they just send a message of distinction or intelligence or whatever. And if you have frameless ones, and I had that kind for a very long time. I don't think it has the same effect. I think when you can see the frames and they become part of your look, I think they tend to have that cultural connotation of, it just makes a person seem smarter.
They're definitely more assertive. I definitely clearly have things to say. Mostly about, will somebody please get Guillermo del Toro out of my bathroom? But read a thing.
You want me to?
Yes.
Let's see.
Do the email thing or I'm leaving.
Well, I mean, you might be sorry.
I only got like 3 episodes of Bob's Burgers left and then I'm caught up. But I saw a trailer. They're putting out a Bob's Burgers movie and I'm very excited for it.
Okay. I mean, because it's an Azure Talon one and it's really long.
Well, we started early enough. Let's see. Go for it. How many chapters?
I mean, there's 4 or 5 paragraphs, fairly long ones.
Ooh, all right. I'm ready.
Here we go.
Strap in, everybody.
He says, okay, here is a list of some of the weird experiences I have had in my life. And so, I mean, there's been one time where I've gone over some of my weird, bizarre experiences. That was like the 5th episode or something. I mean, people probably don't even remember them.
Yeah, but just a few weeks ago, we mentioned it again. So here we are.
I fully understand that they are all more or less explainable as coincidence or misidentification, but they still stand out for me. I have submitted. I have submitted with. I don't know. There's a
sound. Sound the letters out.
A couple people in the world of paranormal podcasts, I have done minimal editing. So if something is over-explained or worded weird, it's an artifact from before. Feel free to break lines up into separate readings. I just didn't want to put the work in to break them up and thought it was easier to leave this one blanket introduction. So I generally want your thoughts on these. I realize it will be mostly met with skepticism, which is fine, but maybe William's psychological studies will point out something I haven't noticed in the past. Experience one.
I am super excited for this.
What? You're being sarcastic? I can't see your face because I'm reading this thing. I only have one monitor right now.
One monitor?
Yeah.
Ah!
Yeah, when I'm in the living room, I only have one monitor. All right. Experience one, Toad Man. I feel like I did that wrong. But anyway, Toad Man. When I was a kid, we would always go for a week's visit to my great aunt's home in Wilmer, Arkansas. Oh, well. I mean, already we can see where this is going. If you Google map it, you'll see that it's a very small town, mostly a series of gravel roads perpendicular to the highway, surrounded by forest and swamp.
I refuse to Google it.
This feels like an elevator pitch for a... Anyway, when I was 12...
Oh, we all know what you're thinking. Yeah.
When I was 12 or 13, we were packing the truck to leave back for home when I saw something odd. Tony, do you happen to know where Back for Home was at this time in his life? Because I don't even remember where Azure Talon was originally from. Is he originally from the Davenport area? Or?
I think it's Munchkin Land. It's whatever's on the west edge of Oz.
Interest that there's actually debate about that. But anyway,
yeah.
We were packing the truck to leave Back for Home when I saw something odd. I was alone at the time. That's always so inconvenient when that happens. And looked 10 or 15 yards across the gravel road through the wire fence immediately on the other side and into the woods that pressed up against it. There I saw about the size of a soccer ball and approximately 3 feet off the ground, the head of a toad. Okay. I'm just trying to even picture that. From the size and height of this head, I figured, but did not see, that it made sense that it was bipedal. I ran inside, and on my next several trips out, I never saw anything again. P.S. This is the gravel road and woods in question. And he links to a something. It must be a picture of some kind. My great aunt's former home is the small blue house down the lane. Oh, this is Google Maps. Okay. I mean, so you and I can both look at this. Obviously.
I mean, I don't listen.
Our listeners can't.
To.
I'm going to real quick.
I'm trying to give the benefit of the doubt here, but I mean, it's in your own words there. You did not see a toad man. You saw a large soccer ball sized toad head floating 3 feet off the ground. It's not the same thing. There's a whole bunch of perfectly logical explanations besides toad man for why you would see a large toad head. Also, how do you know it's a toad head and not a frog head? Did Frogman not sound as cool? This whole thing is getting really suspicious right off the bat.
Okay.
I mean, technically, he only saw the head, so you have no idea what the other 3 feet down were doing. Could have been a stick, could have been an elaborate animatronic setup. Could have been a toad body bipedal, but I'm just saying we can't assume that at this point. I think Occam's razor says it's a floating head. But that's all I have to say about it. What do you think?
I think I want to keep going. Because I feel like there might be some patterns here.
You want to do some psychological profiling. All right. I am for that. Let's do this. Let's give him his just desserts here. All right. Let's continue on to prove Azure Town's actually a psychopath. Let's go.
Okay. Experiences 2, 3, 4. These all kind of tie together from my time with cancer, which we're very grateful he successfully survived. Okay.
Yeah, sure. So,
experience 2 was soon after diagnosis when I was slowly dying the first time. I was rushed to the University of Iowa, and while there, they were running a catheter on my heart, draining my lung of lymph fluid and such. In a sterile OR, I was hit intensely with 3 smells, 2 of which had no business being there. Motor oil, Camel cigarettes, and sweat. In short, it smelled like my dad, who I had lost 6 months prior to this event. Oh, that's very interesting. It's very interesting. Experience 3 was after a systematic cancer was in remission, but after I had a brief fit of dying from brain tumors. I had brain tumors, heavy medication, and stress, and this probably led to my first and only experience with sleep paralysis to date. Oh, okay. Not a ton to tell. I woke up next to my wife. I couldn't move. I was struck with extreme adrenaline as I realized someone or something was in my home. Honestly, I was thinking of a burglar more than a shadow person. I was able to will my arm very slowly and clumsily to reach behind me for the shillelagh that I keep at my bedside. And after a few tries, including trying to pull the bed knob off, I got a hold of my trusty whomping stick. And as soon as I did, the sleep paralysis and fear broke immediately.
Okay. Oh, so you didn't smack yourself in the chest with it? Oh.
Okay. Now, I mean, he characterizes that one as a fairly classic case of sleep paralysis. I mean, it pretty much just has all of the signs of that.
I have never heard a story involving sleep paralysis with the word shillelagh in it before. So I do find it somewhat unusual in my personal experience.
Anyway, this is really interesting, all of this to me. Experience 4.
I'm trying to interpret it for you. You're just having fun learning I'm trying to figure out what deeper is going on. So continue.
Experience four is somewhere in the testimonial slash miracle camp and the least supernatural of them all, but it completes the set. I was in U of I hospitals again. The brain tumors were persistent and I was losing hope. It was honestly a very dark time in my life and I turned to prayer. Meanwhile, my roommate had been brought here from Colorado to see one of the best colon cancer specialists in the country. He has a section of his colon removed and I could overhear that there was some concern that the epidural had not worn out and the expected amount of time and that his family and the doctors were anxiously awaiting his lower body to regain feeling. Well, that would be scary. Back to me, I am in tears and praying, asking for some sign that I was going to make it through this and be there with my daughter. I didn't care about the pain, finances, recovery, sickness. God could give me his worst if I just knew I was going to survive. And as the prayer left my lips, with one perfect comedic beat came an answer in a way that I truly could appreciate. My roommate's epidural chose then to release his bodily functions with an explosion of gas, the likes of which I doubt I will ever hear reproduced. I mean, you can always hope, I guess. So yet there is a part of me that believes I was given a sign in the form of a fart joke. I mean that tracks with Azure Talon, really, I think. When you think about it. Bonus encounter. Oh, here we go. Driving back home with friends after my best friend had moved to DeKalb, Illinois for college, we were driving around a couple small towns looking for an open gas station at about 3 a.m. And one home had a half dozen individuals in hoodies, hoods up, in the front yard building a structure, a shed by the look of it, screened memories, occult, meth, probably meth. Okay. Yeah, probably meth. That's an interesting set of experiences. if I could talk to Azure Talon about this, I would ask about experience four and see what he really thought of it. I mean, because I can't really tell. I can see that it was truly a very dark time and it was a very meaningful, the things that was happening at the time. And the experience itself could truly be meaningful to him as well as being kind of hilarious and funny, but I can't tell if it's either one. Yeah. If he crafted it the way he did just so it would be funny and he remembers it in a funny, not very serious way, or, you know, because I've heard a lot of people tell stories very similar to this and it was funny and everyone's laughing, but it was also profound. And I can't tell if for him it's still profound or if it's just a joke now to him. I have no idea. I can't tell.
Wow. Really just ramming his storytelling talent.
No, I'm not. It's hard to tell.
I can't even tell if the story's supposed to be profound.
It's written down and I'm curious of what his actual true feelings are about.
I think it's very clear cry for understanding. And I, unlike some people, am here to help you out on this. Now, I will say, having experienced the entire saga now, I am unchanged on my opinion vis-a-vis Toad Man. Wasn't a Toad Man, was most likely the common sight we are all familiar with of like a volleyball sized toad head floating about 3 feet off the ground. Most forests and swamps in the Americas, you're going to see that. Not supernatural. The cancer stuff. And this is tricky for me because I'm the one who gave you the cancer. And so, like, on the one hand, way to beat it. But on the other hand, like, you know, why'd I put up the effort, you know, that kind of thing. But I feel like it is very clear from the experiences you described, I think your dad is a shadow person. I think you are half shadow person. I think you do one of the ancestry, the 23andMe. I think you will find, I say half, blue. I think you will find you are a significant percentage shadow person. And just all the stress of the moment, you know, it's like, well, second puberty. Sorry, shadow people, commonly known. Shadow people, the demons that haunt sleep paralysis victims, go through what's called a second puberty, usually around their 40s. And weird stuff happens. You start to teleport and smell your parents. Hair grows where there was no hair before. Anyway. It is a common experience for mixed raced people of your age when one of the races is shadow people. So very uncommon outside of that. But so I think that's what it was. The prayer bit, farts are magic. None of us can say. I am a very serious atheist, but even I know we understand so little about farts and what they're capable of. The last one, I don't think it was meth. I've seen historical descriptions. I think you are witnessing the setup for what would be the first gathering of the Juggalos. And from what I hear, you should have stuck around. It was a good time. It was a fun time. That's what it sounds like. And I feel like, yeah, you missed out on being part of history there. So, did you have anything you wanted to add, William, to this? I know. I was not subtle in discussing his shadow person parentage, but at this age, you can't sugarcoat it anymore.
I mean, I don't have any humorous thoughts. I just have.
Just serious ones about his shadow person parentage and the floating toad head.
I do regret that I'm not talking to him personally about these things, because there's very specific questions I'd ask about every single one of these things.
William wants to be your therapist. I think that would be impressive. You can tell people, like, my therapist. Yeah, he's this dude I listen to his podcast every week. But then somebody gave him a license, so now I pay him money, and he gives me a personal podcast in addition every week. Just for me.
Toad Man.
You could use that model.
That what?
I make you, I do a personal podcast with you once a week if you're one of my clients. That's how we get all these issues out. And it's up to you if you want to publish it. I have a blog. We would love that kind of traffic, but this is about you. So if you just want to keep that podcast for yourself, you're not going to get the numbers.
It wouldn't be a podcast then, would it?
Just a fact. I mean, barely. You're not going to get the same viewing numbers at all, but you know, everybody's got their own journey. So if that's how you got to handle yours, just listening to podcasts by yourself. You should publish it though. Really? You'll feel there's a certain, it's part of the normal process for it. William picked this up in therapy school recently, the importance of when you confront an issue and you process it, and then you lay it out bare on the internet for anyone to listen to.
If I did this, would I apply sitcom therapy or just regular?
I mean, I don't want you to feel stuck in one lane or the other. What brings in the clicks? What brings in the downloads? Oh, that's the important part.
I'm thinking about what's the most therapeutic thing.
No, see, that's your problem. I understand reflexively why you would do that, but you're not. Maslow's hierarchy of viral videos.
Well, let's maybe our listeners can say whether we should do it sitcom therapy if I explain what sitcom therapy is.
You can try.
Sitcom therapy is a person comes in for therapy and they're invited to talk about their problem, and the therapist has a control that he or she can press, and at that moment a laugh track will play, and the therapist makes this laugh track go at moments in the person's presenting issues that
are supposed to be therapeutic. Tell them yet. This is a project we have. That patent pending. Don't anybody take that. We're working. We're still workshopping this. Don't give them our material.
I asked you if I should say, and you said you told me to go ahead and try.
Well, I didn't remember you gave it a name.
Oh, yeah, sitcom therapy.
I know. And I still think we need a greater soundboard.
It's a lot. Not just laughter.
No.
People
no.
kind of moaning or gasping or like
musical stings.
Oh.
But we're not supposed to be talking about it. Nobody steal our idea. This is our thing. And also don't send us links to somebody who already did it. It's probably a bunch of we live in a very small cone. We want this to feel original though. So don't steal it or tell us about how we're stealing it. We don't want to know.
Well, we're not, I never heard about anyone doing it before. So it's
exactly,
not stealing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So save a tree. Don't send a cease and desist letter.
It seems like it would be funny. But it also seems like it would work.
Stop talking about it. Give people ideas. It's not ready for prime time yet.
Okay. Anyway, I think these are very interesting stories, Azure Talon. I would love to have the opportunity to talk to you about them personally and ask you questions so I can get some clarification on some things like when you say that you got the sense that the Toad Man was bipedal. I'm unclear as to how that works. What made you think that?
He only had two peds. One ped, two peds.
And
hence bipedal. Bi meaning two and ped meaning ped.
I know, but he couldn't see that. He just got the impression that that's what was going on, but I don't. Why? I mean, why couldn't it have just been a giant toad? How do you not? I mean,
or
you wouldn't be able to tell.
Floating head.
And it seems like if I did some research, I'd find other people reporting instances of the whole having some kind of a sentimental sense experience like that in a moment like that. I think that might be something that other people have reported. I don't know. I'd have to look it up, but it sounds really interesting.
And I want you to go and find your night people family and take lots of pictures.
The sleep paralysis sounds pretty straightforward and classic, but that's still an interesting experience to hear someone talk about. And I don't know how seriously he takes the fourth thing, but interesting stuff. Very interesting. I mean, to be honest and fair, of course, I'm a skeptic about things. I don't hide the ball on that, but that doesn't mean I don't find these things interesting or that I think I'm right. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, you know, I'm perfectly open to that. But I do demand, you know, if someone's going to make extraordinary claims, they have to have extraordinary evidence, which so far nobody really ever has had. I mean, sometimes it can be interesting evidence, you know, like that video of fighter jets chasing, you know, flying objects or whatever that was released in the last couple of years. That's very interesting, but people kind of ignore what the information that we don't have. And that's important too. So you can't really draw as many conclusions about things like that as people seem to think they can. So I remain skeptical of all that kinds of stuff.
I don't hide the ball on that. You said that.
Yeah.
What's that mean?
Well, it means that if I'm having a conversation with people about this kind of stuff, I don't, you know, in the interest of trying to get them to open up, I don't keep undisclosed the idea that I'm predisposed to be skeptical about whatever it is they're talking about. I want them to know that up front, that I'm a skeptic. And so, because there are some people who are skeptics who, to get people to talk to them about these types of experiences, they don't, they won't tell them that they're skeptics. They won't disclose that up front.
Sorry. I was very clear on the metaphoric meaning. Who was hiding what ball that prompted this to become a saying?
I don't know. I think it comes from football.
Do they hide footballs?
Well, there are plays in football where a person, you fake a handoff to someone and they act like they have a ball when they don't. And the person who really has the ball also is not like holding it out for everybody to see. They're holding it in a way that you're not going to look at them until they're well out of range for being tackled or stopped or anything else. So it's a thing that happens in American football, a deliberate thing people do in plays to trick the opposing side into thinking the ball is over here when it's really over here.
Even more evil than I realized.
It could also make reference to certain magic tricks where you pretend that the ball is behind under a cup, but it really isn't because you've hidden it and taken it out. But you continue to let other people think that the ball is somewhere. So when they pick the right cup, you know, it'll be there, but it won't be because it's not underneath anything.
Find my skepticism. Keep an eye on my skepticism.
It could make reference to that. But I've heard people use that idiom to mean when they're interacting with someone and they're not forthcoming with, you know, all the information that a person should require in an interaction to have it and stay informed consent about what they're going to say or whatever.
Or football. I did not agree for that ball to be hiding.
I find myself in difficult circumstances sometimes when I'm eager to know this type of information. I'm eager to hear people's stories like this. But I also know that some people aren't going to be willing to disclose if they know what my usual attitude is about these things. And so I feel like it would be unethical for me to ask them to tell me their story if they don't know upfront that I'm a skeptic, because I think they deserve the opportunity to decide if they're going to disclose to a skeptic or not. I think it would be unethical.
I knew your initial meaning. I didn't find that interesting. I was way more curious about the idiom origin.
I think it's American football, but it could be, you know, because that's been a thing in American culture for a long time, shell games and whatever.
Ball hiding.
Yeah. Well, shell games where you trick people out of their money by having them guess where the ball is under, you know, cups or something. Uh-huh. And it's not really anywhere because you've hidden it. It could make reference to that, I guess.
But like it makes me think, skepticism.
It makes me think of American football. So that's what I tend to think it is.
I'm very skeptical about American football, so that works well. All right. Well, you know what the big Addy laying on my chest means.
We're out of time.
We're out of time. If you have feelings about the experiences that Azure Talon had, let us know. If you have feelings about us and what we say, let us know. Also, my cat left again. I'm so sad.
I want to thank Azure Talon for sending us that, because
very much so. It was very interesting.
Some people wouldn't do that because of a variety of reasons. I'm glad that he did.
Some people, I have it on good authority, aren't Azure Talon.
Your eyes are still moving. Even the fan wasn't, but your eyes were.
I think you should also go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us whether or not you think this whole episode was scripted.
A good portion of it kind of was.
Never know. Also, write in with your own emails. If Azure Talon can tell us this stuff, you can surely tell us salad dressing preferences. Or whatever else you want. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Also, I completely forgot to talk about The Apple, which is an insane 1980 disco rock opera loosely based on the fall of Adam and Eve from Paradise, maybe. It's a very weird movie. But I guess I'll just talk about it a different time.
Can't wait for that.
I'm shooting for the episode with the most awkward pauses in it. Somebody total those up. All right. I gotta go things. And in the meantime, you should also listen and continue for us. And also with you.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.